Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
So our ECW podcast, we're going to bring in some of the biggest names, the most important names in ECW history. So we're going to start, we got Bully Ray and D-Von, the Dudleys are here.
Here they come. Come on in, guys. Yeah. I guess we're going to have some kind of music. We also got Jerry Lynn is here. Missy wearing her bikini, amazing.
Well, you know, I told Medusa that I was going to come and do a bikini contest, and she chickened out, so I'm here. She's not.
And you win, the winner.
Exactly.
So we're talking about ECW, and obviously ECW at this point in time is almost a mythical country where strange people used to live and work and wrestle in. And I think the legend is huge, but actually delving into what this company was is quite important because people don't quite get just how like I said, how integral it was for us at this point in time. Bubba, why don't you start off by telling us what you think ECW was, is, and the legacy of this company.
No disrespect to the company that you're working in now, but ECW was the real revolution. To the entire wrestling business, whether it was the WWE or WCW at the time. Nobody can ever, you can say what you want about ECW, but the company revolutionized professional wrestling. Without ECW, there is no Attitude Era. It's just the way it is. And it was never meant to go on forever. It was meant to crash and burn. We were the Sex Pistols. We were punk rock. We were all those things. And we all got to experience it and have a blast with it. So
why do you say that if there was no ECW, there'd be no Attitude Era?
Well, think about the WWE before Vince came on TV that one night and said, you know, we're going to change our attitude and we're going to do things differently. Vince McMahon was dealing with something on Monday Night Raw that he had never dealt with before in his life. His fan base chanting three other letters. And eventually, he had to sit up and take notice and go, why are these people hijacking my live Monday Night Raw by chanting ECW? So Vince Russo, who was the head writer at the time, was also a huge ECW fan. So they had to do something, and ECW forced the hand of the entire wrestling industry.
Do you agree with that, D-Von?
Absolutely. I remember I testified. I remember going into the Manhattan Center when we did the invasion, and I remember looking at the expression on Vince McMahon's face sitting down and commentating like, what the f*** I let in my building? it was so cool to see that. And like Bubba said, there can't be no denying that ECW changed professional wrestling.
Yes, sir.
If it wasn't for ECW, there would probably be no Stone Cold Steve Austin drinking beer and governing the middle of the ring.
Good point.
You know, I mean, it was, he came to ECW, Steve Austin did after leaving WCW, and went to WWE and then had this whole new persona. And, you know, it was because of ECW that gave Steve the, you know, I don't want to say courage, but he gave him the notion to be able to come back and to be himself again after dealing with what he dealt with in WCW.
And, and just the crazy part is, and we're talking to you, and like, we're, but you know this already. It's like for you guys who don't know this already, you know, Devon just brought up, you know, Steve Austin. You know, Steve was so mad after Bischoff fired him the way he did. And Paul Heyman said, Steve, come on in. Here's a microphone. Say whatever you want.
Now, Misty, when you came to ECW, because at the time too in the 90s, there was no Divas, there was no, you know, women's championship, women's main eventing, WrestleMania, none of that stuff. So when you first came into the company, what was your role? Because I remember my first day in ECW, I've told this before, I walked in there as a 25-year-old kid, and I could not believe how many beautiful women that were in the locker room. I couldn't believe it. I was like, because where I came from, like, you know, women's wrestling was, you know, women's wrestling at the time, which was fine, but then all the girls were dressed like you. And I was like, what is this? I have never seen this before in my life. There was a real punk rock attitude and a real sex appeal to this company that didn't exist in any others at the time.
Well, that's Paul Lee. I mean, if it wasn't, wrestling even wouldn't even be around right now if it wasn't for Paul Heyman, I believe.
Why do you say that?
Change. I mean, wrestling has to change with the times, and you can't keep doing the same old stuff. You got to change with the times, and people grow up and want new different things. And Paul's changed it and made it cool again. And ECW made wrestling cool again to people, because you see somebody, you would be out and you see somebody with an ECW shirt on, and you'd be, oh yeah, right. ECW, store, anywhere, you'd see somebody and you just felt like a kinship to them, and it was cool to like ECW.
Yeah.
I remember I was living in Calgary at the time, working mostly in Japan. I tried to get into ECW for a year. And I started calling, Mick Foley gave me Paul's number. I started calling Paul one full year, and I got in touch with him twice. One time he answered the phone, I was like, hello, is Paul hanging there, please? No, this is his roommate, Dave. It's Paul Heyman. And the other time was, he goes, hello, Chris Jericho, I'm just on the other line with Jimmy Snuka. I'll call you right back. I told that to Mick Foley. I said, I got a hold of Paul Lee, but he says he'll call back. Did he say he was on the line with Jimmy Snuka? Yeah, you got... ECW, like, you could find it on satellite TV in Calgary, and a friend of mine had the MSG network, I think it was, and I remember this guy's family, they were like hoarders, like those TV shows you see with the house just packed like a rat's nest. We had to walk through like a little corridor with all this stuff and move over here, and there was a TV there, and I had to sit there like this to watch ECW on the satellite. But that was how the cool factor was. Now the other side of it, Jared, I'm going to ask you about, was the work rate. That was another thing. We had the hardcore style. We had the sex appeal, but also too, starting with Hoovy and Ray and Dean and Eddie and Chris, and then Jerry Lynn comes in. You're doing all these great matches with RVD and with Lance Storm. The work rate in ECW was a different level at the time as well.
Well, I wanted to hit on what Missy said, where the business continues to change and evolve, and you have to keep up with the times. So when I was in WCW, I would get together with a buddy of mine, and at 2 o'clock in the morning on some obscure network, we would watch ECW. And I told him that is one company I will never work for. Yeah. And Balls and Sandman trade chair shots, and the fans are handing weapons, microwave ovens, and frying pans over the rail, and everyone's clocking each other in the head with it.
Yeah, that would have been us. Those who cannot wrestle use furniture.
So when Paulie knew I wasn't under contract, he had Candido call me up, and Candido says, yeah, Paulie wants to know if you want to come in and do a couple shots. And I said, all right. I said, here's how much I want. And I said, one more thing. And Chris says, what's that? I go, I don't want some idiot hitting me in the head with a frying pan. He goes, no, we got our brawlers and we got our wrestlers. You know, and I'd seen Dean and Eddie's matches and Mysterio and Psychosis and that. So I felt a little more at ease, but I learned real fast I was going to have to get hit in the head with a kendo stick. I was going to go through who knows how many tables, and I was going to have Rob kick a chunk of steel through my skull. So, but I learned, you know, like she said, the business continues to change and evolve, and you have to be willing to change and evolve with it a little bit if you want to survive. But like you said, Rob and I guess right from the first match, we just clicked and felt like we had chemistry. And so I think both of us wanted to make it more fun for ourselves. Plus, we wanted to make it more growing up. For me as a fan, I didn't want to watch two good guys wrestle. Yeah. I want to see a good guy, bad guy. Yeah. So I think my goal was to make it so it would be fun for the fans to watch two good guys wrestle.
Yeah. Wrestling changes with the time at GCW. I don't know if anybody's.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be like the new thing. I think wrestling's kind of edging over that
new
way.
Form of ECW.
Yeah, the new form of like the way ECW was.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's talk a little about Paul Heyman. One of the true characters in a business filled with characters. Bubba, do you agree with this?
Yes, he's a character. I worked very, very closely with the man. And he's, remember Wile E. Coyote, super genius? He's Wile E. Coyote. For as crazy as Paul was, and Missy, you know him longer than all of us. You knew him when he was young and crazy, you know, we all worked with him. The guy really is, he's a super genius because he outsmarted us all. Mm. He's lasted longer than just about anyone. If you sit back and you look at this, right? Whoever complains about this and that, or money and blah, 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 I'm like, this motherfucker is making millions of dollars.
It's interesting how he always seems to be the, what does he call himself? The confidant?
The advocate?
The advocate for the top guy.
The wise man.
He's the advocate for the top guy in the company every time. Now, Missy, you knew Paul since he was young. Is this when you were in WCW?
No, I met Paul in Georgia way before Eddie Gilbert was going to Continental Wrestling. Woo! And booking there. And we met Paulie there, and I fell in love with Paul. We'd be on the phone, we'd have $500 phone bills back in the day because we were on the phone gossiping and talking about wrestling. And then when Eddie went to book Continental, I said, you gotta hire Paul. No, I don't want it. I'm like, you gotta hire Paul. So of course he does what I say because I'm smart. And so he hires Paul, and they end up becoming really good friends, and they would get together, and then he realized just how smart he was. And I went into his bedroom. We shared an apartment in Montgomery, Alabama for about 6 months. And I went into his room, and the only thing I saw were white shirts, buttoned-up shirts, and a box of baseball cards.
That was it.
That was the only thing in there, and a mattress on the floor.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, whatever. Yeah, I was scared to go in the room. Who knew what was in there? But anyway, I've known him for that long, and him and Eddie would get together and just be up all night talking angles and what they're going to do and do everything. And he was smart then, and he's still smart now.
Let's talk about the creation of the Dudleys. So the idea was that the Dudleys' father, thank him, he was a jobber. He banged a bunch of rats and all you guys came out.
He bought back a bunch of racks at the end.
greatest characters in ECW history.
Well, you know, Big Daddy Dudley went around the world making bands. At least if I can remember them all. Big Dick Dudley, God rest his soul. Dudley Dudley, Chubby Dudley, Dances with Dudley, Sign Guy Dudley, Spike Dudley. I mean, hey, I gotta say,
Spike Dudley should be in the Hall of Fame. Because he got every single one of us over.
And I tell you what, Daddy Dudley was doing a lot of acid when he made Spike. No question about that. And then, of course, you know, Bubba Ray Dudley, he was made, you know, Dad watched Deliverance one too many times. And then Big Daddy Dudley decided to go to the south side of Dudleyville and mess with the brothers and sisters, and here I am.
I forgot about Scott Dudley, who still owes me $200 for the electric bill when we lived together in Morristown, Tennessee.
The crazy thing about the family was, when they didn't know what to do with you, make them a Dudley. There was no rhyme, there was no reason. The whole Dudley family is based off of the movie Slapshot.
Ah, with the glasses.
Remember the Hanson brothers? Those are our cousins.
Yes.
I would have rather have been a Dudley than what I did at ECW, to be honest with you.
What did you do?
All you have to do is get out with the Sandman.
What did you do at ECW?
The Sandman.
Okay, gotcha. Let's talk about the Sandman, because once again, another thing about Paulie that he was a genius about was he would exemplify the strengths and hide the weaknesses. And I learned this once again as a 25-year-old kid. That's the secret of the wrestling business, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about what you can do, what you can't do, it's what you can do. And that's why Ultimate Warrior, one of the biggest stars of his generation. You would never call the Ultimate Warrior a great wrestler. He didn't have to be. He had personality, charisma, and a great ring entrance that hooked us all in. Paulie was great at doing that. And Sandman was a perfect example.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, Sandman, just his ring entrance and everything was incredible. I mean, it was a shame that he had about 3 cases of beer in him when he went out there to work. Scared to work with him because they were like, I don't know if I really want to get in the ring with him. He's drunk.
Yeah. I always heard from the boys he was safer drunk than
he was. There was an incident. We were in New Jersey and we had about 15 minutes of the match, and we're about 3 minutes in. He takes a wooden ladder, puts it on my chest, and does it to a pay into the ring, onto the ladder, onto me, tore my pec muscle. I'm screaming. We got about 15 more, like 10, 12 minutes left in the match, and I gotta go through the match and finish it. We get in the back, he goes, Devon, are you okay? I go, no, I'm not okay, I'm hurt. I was like, what were you thinking with that wooden ladder? Bubba goes, what the fuck are you sitting there laying there waiting for me to do? So I remember it was like 3 weeks later, we had a match with him and Tommy Dreamer at the ECW arena. He walks into the arena and he goes, Devon, what are we doing tonight? I go, I don't know. I go, how come you're not slurring your words? He goes, I didn't have any drinks. He was like, I no beer. I was like, no beer? Hold on 1 second. I'm gonna call me a runner. I said, we're gonna be on in 15 minutes. Get that son of a bitch a lot of beer.
Dressing room, I'm like, where's your stuff? Over there by my beer cans. And
there was
like 100 beer cans all around
and
stuff.
Jerry, one night, working with Rob, right? I'm talking to Rob and he's completely coherent and fine. I said, are you straight right now? He goes, yeah. I go, go smoke, please. Rob was a million times better stoned.
Seen him straight.
But that's the thing too, you guys have to understand. And once again, you know, coming from Calgary, everybody was up there too. But coming into ECW, the partying factor in the dressing room and after the show was next level. I remember going to the Travel Lodge in Philly, which is, you go, if I showed you this right now, it is a rough, rough place.
A cylinder of sin.
The center of sin. And all the fans knew that we stayed there. So you would go into the lobby, and ECW was a lot of the Jericho Cruise. Everybody's friends. You're friends with the fans, you're friends with the boys, you're friends with the girls, the referees, the crew. Everybody's hanging out. But the level of just this crazy debauchery, you know, you're talking about Sammy, but then you got Scotty is there, Raven is there, and you, God bless Anthony, Pitbull too, like all of us. Everybody's off the rock, and I remember just like, this place is awesome. Have to do the interviews for the show that night, and Paulie would take so long that by the time you had your interview at 2 or 3 in the morning, unless you were a true professional like maybe Lance Storm, loaded. And I can tell you, if you ever watched some ECW interviews that I didn't get a lot of them probably because I was too loaded for most of them, but that remember having to do those interviews late at night.
And Paulie was smart there because we wouldn't get paid till the last person was done doing their promos. So no one could leave.
He was great with me. He would ask me, how much do you want? What do you think you deserve? And I would tell him, and he would pay me. That's my relationship.
See, and here's the thing, Missy, and we have talked about this many times. Paulie was very smart because we didn't get paid a lot of money, but he would pay me. I mean, when I got my check, and my check's always clear with Paulie. I was the one there for 6 months.
Mine too, because if he would have given me a check that balanced, I would have been like, either pay me in cash or bye-bye.
Right. Well, so he would give me my check. It was like $250, but he'd put plus $50 bonus, $300. But the bonus, I got a bonus. He probably owed me $600. Doesn't matter. $250 plus $50. That gave us fire to want to perform for him. Remember we spoke about this, Bubba?
The entire locker room would legitimately go to war for Paul Heyman and not even think twice about it. If you guys ever get a chance, go on YouTube and watch Paul's pre-match speech to the locker room right before Bailey Legal. To this day, goosebumps. Because we knew that this, the first pay-per-view for ECW was a huge deal. And when Paul says, you've made it to the dance, I got goosebumps right now. He said you made it to the dance. We did.
Yeah.
This company that should have never succeeded out of a bingo hall was now on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
So an incredible motivator. And even if he owed you money, you somehow forgot about how much he owed you because of what he would say to you.
Jerry, let's talk about those speeches at the arena. He would stand up at the top of you guys hear about the ECW arena, right? And you're envisioning like, this is an arena and it's this. But by the way, it's not just a bingo hall. The back locker room area is a ghetto. It's decrepit, it's dirty, there's no shower. I don't even remember being a bathroom.
There's no chair to sit in. All the chairs have been broken. And tables.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We live in ghettos there too. But it was such a decrepit area. Like I remember my mind's eye, no shower, maybe a bathroom, but it probably was broken. Just dirty. Like it's not what you're envisioning, this glorified ECW arena. But Paulie would stand at the top of the staircase there, and we'd have the whole crew. He's like the Messiah. It's like if you guys are horror movie fans, Damien Omen 3, when he's at the top and all of his minions are there and he's talking to them. And what would he say, Jerry?
Oh, it didn't matter what he said, but at the end of that speech, everyone was ready to slit their own wrists. And everyone, you know, talks and raves about the pay-per-views. I think all of our house shows were pay-per-view quality. We were never going to let up. We were... we were there trying to build something, and I still say to this day, all our house shows were pay-per-view quality. And even when we were behind in pay, you know, we were probably 2.5 months behind in pay, we still went out there and gave it our all because we really believed in what we were trying to build.
I remember, and Bubba and Devon, all you guys, I remember him standing there and saying, "This is the island of misfit toys. You are the outcasts that no one else will hire, and you are the finest people and pro wrestlers in the world today, and I am honored to be here working with you." And you'd be like, "Hey, man. Nobody else wants you, but I do, and they do, and they live for you and die for you, and at the end you're just like, kill!" And that's kind of what he would do, because of Braveheart shit, right?
It's like, drink the Kool-Aid.
Right.
Everybody was ready to drink the Kool-Aid.
I'm drinking buckets of the shit. It's pouring all over.
There's only two ways to show how much you appreciate a pro wrestler. What are they?
You tell me.
There's only two ways a promoter can show their true appreciation. With an extra zero on the paycheck, which was not happening in these days. Or a pat on the back. Because a pat on the back goes a long way with all of us. Because we're used to not getting those pats on the back. All we hear about is the negative, the negative, the negative. And it'll wear on you after a while. But Paul would be the first, like what Chris said about the speech, or when you came back through that curtain, he was the first one there to thank you, to hug you, to tell you, great job, but here's how you can do better the next time. And, right? I mean, how many times me and you was in just so motivational?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, Paul was the type of guy where you would be angry with him. I'm going to tell Paul off. I'm tired of shit. This shit ain't going to happen anymore. By the time you walked out of that office, damn, I believe in Paul. Mindset just changed. We like to call him the Dave Koresh of the wrestling business. That's really what he was. I mean, you actually believed every single word he said.
He was a Jedi. He could do that to you. And I wanted you to expand about, because we discussed this many times. There's, like you said, there's the money on the check, or there's the pat in the back. And as time goes on, the money's great, but the pat in the back still means so much. You know, Jared and I work together every week in AEW. When you hear that the boss liked it, or if Jerry's my agent, Jerry liked it, like producer, it means something. And Paul was so fucking good at it, because he knew he didn't have the cash. Like I said, $250 at the time, I was probably making $500, so $280. But it meant a lot to me to see the bonus. Like, he gave you a bonus. Like that. I just remember feeling so great about every time coming through the curtain, whether we're at the arena or whether we were in frickin', you know, Poughkeepsie or somewhere, Ithaca, Syracuse, Allentown.
That reminds me, when you said Paulie's always there patting you on the back, and Poughkeepsie was me and Rob for Hardcore Heaven. And that's when I smashed my face on the concrete. We fell off the top rope, and after the match, as soon as I get back to the curtain, Paulie's standing there, and he's going, "That was the greatest match I've ever seen." And I went, "I hated it. It sucked." And Nova comes over, "Come on, Jerry, let's go get some air." But even though there was a couple of screw-ups, he was there, you know, just telling you what a great job you did.
Quick detour, Missy, you mentioned Eddie Gilbert. I know you guys were together for a while. We always hear about the genius of Eddie Gilbert. Eddie passed away decades ago. I don't know about the genius of Eddie Gilbert. Please explain it to us. His mindset.
His mindset. His intelligence. Oh my God. He lived and breathed, and everything was all about wrestling. He would watch tapes. He was always learning. He was always trying to see the next thing that he could do. He showed me that he was booking matches when he was like 15 years old. He had like little books and he would write like Jerry Lawler versus so-and-so and this match is going to be this, and he would work out a whole program and who and what they would do and what the matches would lead to. He grew up watching Memphis Wrestling and watching, you know, Jerry Lawler and everybody that came through, but he loved wrestling so much that that's all he cared about. I bought him a boat when we were in WCW, so I'd like to give him a hobby to do something, and I think he took it out twice. He would be up all night watching tapes and just thinking about wrestling.
One of my favorite angles was him and Tommy Rich in Memphis when he did the double turn on TV.
What did he do?
It was like him and Tommy Rich were a tag team, and they were awarded this tag team of the year award or something, and Eddie Jones, Tommy. Well, Tommy ended up fighting back and just bloodied Eddie and whatever. After commercial break, he comes out, and he's out there, and he does this tear-filled apology. He's bloody, he's dabbing the blood, he's crying, and he gets Tommy Rich to come out, and he gives this heartfelt, just tearful apology, and then he attacks Tommy again. And it just, the way he took the people's emotions and just played with them and toyed with them, after he was done, he had even more heat than we started with. Because they bit hook, line, and sinker, and it was just an amazing piece of work.
We had Willie B. Hurt in Continental. I remember Continental.
Hold on.
If anybody could
hold
get
on one second. Willie B. Hurt. What a f***ing wrestling name. Go ahead.
Can't come with that. But if anybody can get any Continental Wrestling Federation tapes, you can see the months that Eddie booked it. It's really amazing booking. I mean, he took, like, no people coming to the shows to, like, people coming to the shows. It was amazing. But he beat up his Billy B. Hurt's 12-year-old son. And this was in 1988, I think it was. And pulls a kid over and beats him up. And then he beat up his friend, John Gillum, who was slightly slow. But he grew up with John Gillum, and they learned how to wrestle each other, so John could take him. John could take it, you know, and knew how it worked. And, just beat the living crap out of him. I mean, people thought that he was beating up a slow kid. You know? And just the other thing, he was doing stuff before. I mean, I always think that Eddie started ECW.
And he was involved in the beginning.
Yeah, he was involved in the beginning. And then my boyfriend made a meme, and it was like, you know, the cat, the lady screaming at the cat, and it's me with the cat sitting there, and I was like, Eddie Gilbert started ECW. And then the little cat said, I'm a Paul Heyman guy.
Let's talk about what's in
store. You know what, I'm just curious about something with everybody here. Is there anybody here who never saw ECW?
Okay. So this is why it's good to go back and talk about this, you know? Let's talk a little bit, Bubba, about the mythos of the ECW arena. Because once again, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Why was the ECW arena such a... The Corken Hall, if you will. Corken Hall is a very famous small arena in Tokyo that everybody has heard of. When you go to Corken Hall, it's small. It really is. Why is the ECW arena have the same almost reputation when you say the name is Madison Square Garden in a lot of ways?
Because that's where it all changed. The company needed a home base, and it just happened to be that rundown bingo hall. And it became it's so legendary today. Today, if you ask me, where do you want to have your last match? I don't want to have my last match in Madison Square Garden. I could really give a shit less about the Garden. I'd rather be in the ECW ring. One of the things for me, and I think I'm speaking for Devon too, there's nothing better than being able to make eye contact with every single one.
Monstrous entity. You can't see anybody. It's a spectacle.
In a smaller place, we can connect with you. And that's what we're trying to do at the end of the day. We want to connect with every last one of you in this building. Like, if there's somebody here, a couple of you never saw never seen me and him do our goofy shit. We want you to go watch us. Like, we want it to be fun for you. And if we can see you, we can take you on the ride with us.
There's countless special moments that happened in that building. I mean, you talk about Sabu and Terry Funk and the barbed wire match. Countless. And talk about a special moment that you were there for, Jerry. Beulah and Fonzie. And Fonzie's match.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Explain what happened. Because it was a
Well, Fonzie was wearing the black shirt, but during the match, he got busted open. He was bleeding so much. But just,
like, it's one of those blood jobs that looks like the movie Carrie. And this is against Beulah. So Beulah beat the out of Fonzie, who's a guy, Bill Alfonso. He was Sabu's manager, Taz's manager, and it was a crazy spectacle. Yes.
But the crazy thing, and I don't know if you guys know this, and here I'm going to pull back the curtain, Fonzie was getting fired that night.
Still in Cali, Fonzie was implicated as one of the guys that was helping, and Paul Heyman found out about it. So it was basically, he was going to get fired that night, so he was told he better go in there and have a hell of a match with Beulah, and he did. Not only that, but he almost lost his life bleeding to death.
He bled so much that Paul basically went, how can I fire this guy after what he just did? Now, Fonzie's been in the business for 100 years, so he's probably like, hey, Daddy, I'm going to get so much color tonight, they can't fire me.
Missy, do you have a memory of the ECW arena?
ECW fit? Like 5,000, maybe 4,000?
ECW arena?
Yeah.
Gosh, 1,200.
1,200 tops.
1,200.
Well, it's
once again, we think it's so much
bigger. Somebody was drinking Sandman's beers.
Short hair at the time, and I had this little ponytail wig thing that fit on the top of my ponytail, and I told Sandman's wife, when you hit me in the head with the boot, hit me down here, don't hit me up here, because it's going to fall off, right? So
wig.
What did she do? She hit me in my wig, and not until you've had, which I thought was like 2,000 people, it sounded like 2,000 people chant, when I'm laying down, supposed to be passed out, where's your hair? Where's your hair? Taking the hair, I found it, and I was like, oh shit, it's really off my head. And I start hitting Sandman with it, waking him up, hitting the people as I'm going back from the rain. What else are you gonna do with it? What are you gonna do?
So I was at the arena, and the ring broke. You guys, I think, were there. And it took...
That would have been a perfect time for a dreamer joke.
And it's taken this poor crew like minutes. And the ECW arena crowd is a little bit unruly. They're starting to chant things, whatever. There was a girl at the time working for us called Kimona Wanalea. And she was a stripper. So Paulie goes, go up to the crow's nest. There's a crow's nest at the top of the ECW arena. Right up here, right. Go up to the top of the crow's nest and do a strip tease while we're fixing the ring. So she goes up there and she starts doing it. They might have even played the stripper. And she's doing dancing, whatever. And all the crowd is there. It's like probably 99% dudes and a couple of chicks, whatever. They're all just going crazy. And I'm standing there watching Terry Gordy, the late, great Terry Gordy, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time. God bless him, and you knew Terry as well. He had a couple overdoses. His mind was a little bit messed up, but he was sitting there, and he was spitting into a cup, and he was like watching Kimona, and I'm watching Kimona doing her striptease as a fixer, and he's like, damn, this ain't like any other wrestling company I ever worked for. Paulie sold that video on his show for like 10 years after. That's what he. You can see the Kimona Wanalea striptease, the legendary striptease. job.
Yeah, Paul's really tall, and Taz is, like, really short.
He says, I did it, I sent it out today. I said, what's the tracking number?
Dude, I know what you're gonna say.
The tracking number is 5-3-2-1-8-7-6-0-2. Paul, that's one number too many.
That's what I was gonna say, mine was one number too short.
He said, just knock off the last number.
No, I don't think, I mean, again, he's like, Jerry, he's never bounced a check on me, you know? But, you know, but it was one of those things where, Paulie, I have to leave. My son is having a birthday party, so can we please do the promo earlier tonight? Devon, on your kids, I will have you out of here. You will be the first one to leave. And I'm sitting up here going, all right, yeah. Bubba, I'm going to do this promo and get the hell out of here. I'm great. 5 hours later, I'm still in the ECW arena, and we still haven't done our promo yet. And I'm looking at Paul, I'm like, Paul, he goes, don't worry, I'll have you out of here. I said, Paulie, I was supposed to leave 3 hours ago. He goes,
trust me, on your kid.
Hold on.
Don't do that. It was always, so whenever Paul Lee with me, because he knew how important my kids were, my family, so he would always use my kids as a point, on your kids. Paul, stop f***ing lying.
I just wanted, you asked before about the moments in the arena. I just want to acknowledge one person. I think this is actually one of the most important moments, if not the most important in the arena, that doesn't get talked about enough. And this is the night Shane Douglas threw down the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and raised up the ECW Championship. So that's a very important night. I just want to tell a quick funny story, because this revolves around you a little bit too, about a moment in the ECW arena. And I have a photo of this, and I'll throw it up on the old Twitter machine before the weekend's over. Me and Devon, before we were teaming, we were fighting each other like crazy. And there's a shot from the ECW arena where Devon's cracking me over the head with a steel chair. And if you look at the back of my head, you can look and see all the dents that Devon has left in the back of my head over the years. So, there's Devon cracking me with a chair, and he's the bad guy, I'm the good guy, and the entire, if you go figure, right? Except for one kid who's standing up cheering. You know who the kid was?
Who? Your boss.
Tony Khan. Wow. Me and Tony Khan have unfinished business.
There's a great, on the same night I wrestled two Cold Scorpio.
But Tony was there to see Chris and Taz, because they were your favorite wrestlers.
So Tony,
and how Chris got that mega contract out of it.
So Tony was like kind of a child genius or whatever, and his parents wanted him to sign up for a higher level school. He didn't want to go. They said, just sign up for it. Nothing's gonna happen. He signed up for it, he got in, and his parents are gonna make him go. He's like, I don't wanna go. It's like, you can do anything you want as long as you go to the school. He says, I wanna go to Chris Jericho's last match in ECW in the ECW arena versus Two Cold Scorpio. Two Cold Scorpio is I'm gonna try and bring him on the cruise hopefully next year. He is a great guy. He was super acrobatic, but he was a big man. He had a big ass thick. He was about 240. When Scorp did these flippity-dippity-doos, sometimes he hit it, sometimes he didn't, which means he lands on your face. He did a front flip leg drop, and you can see it. He lands right on my face. The moment he lands on my face, pause it. Go over here. You'll see a little kid with a Taz shirt going like this. Tony Khan.
What a mark.
Paul Lee's favorite things was the bereavement fair. Are you guys familiar with this? When somebody in your family dies and you have to buy a ticket to get to the funeral the next day or whatever, the airlines offer you a bereavement fair. It's half price, whatever it is. I woke up one morning in Philly after a travel lodge night of debauchery and promos or what we were doing, and I missed my flight. I live in Calgary. I might as well be on Mars. It's a million miles away. I'm so scared. Like, I missed my flight. I need to change it. I call the airlines. They're like, Mr. Irvin, we will do anything we can to accommodate you. We're very sorry. I'm like, wow, like, they're really cool. Airlines are awesome. I don't feel bad. I missed my flight. I'm like, well, that's great. We just really feel bad about what you went through. I'm like, what did I go through? Well, you know, the loss of your family member. Huh? Well, you bought a bereavement fare. What is that? Yes, my bereavement fare. Yes, sure. So the next week I see Paul. I'm like, Paul, why did you book me a bereavement fare? And I tell him, what did I say? Well, they said it was a bereavement fare. Wait one second. He pulls out a tablet of doctor's office paper letter, stationery. He writes, "Mr. Irvin has suffered a terrible loss. We're very thankful that you allowed him to have his bereavement fair. Thank you for accommodating him. Signed, Dr. Heidi P. Schwartz." Or he goes, "Take this. Next time it happens, just use that." But next time.
Do you guys know the Ron?
Ron's doing the story. Tell the
story.
Tell the Ron's doing the story.
Same story. But Ron gets to the arena, and Ron is not happy. And Ron makes a beeline up to Paul Heyman, and he goes, "Do I look like a Mr. Rabinowitz to you?"
Show my teeth.
This is off, but I want to know if this is true. Speaking of checks, because we were talking about checks.
Right.
Is it true that you got a check for $0.00?
WCW.
Yeah.
I got a check once for $0.00. That they FedExed to me.
So it is true.
It's true. WCW did. As we start to wind down here, let's talk about our favorite moments in the ECW match-wise, promo-wise, whatever. Jerry, what's your favorite moment in your ECW career? Because once again, we haven't really delved into this love for you. You were kind of a journeyman in WCW, or Mr. the very imaginative, creative name of Mr. JL. Would you say that was the pinnacle of your career, in-ring career, or one of them?
In ECW?
Was ECW, yeah.
Yeah, that's where, you know, there was a saying years ago that you really didn't hit your stride till 10 years in. And that's when it happened for me, was in ECW, and that was about 10 years in, where I just hit my strides, and just with the timing and, you know, your footwork and your moving. And
you were the ECW champion.
Yeah.
So Paulie trusted you with that.
Yeah. But, and there was a lot of great moments because, you know, I had a lot of great moments with Lance Storm, just incredible, Chris Candido. You know, there's so many great workers there.
Talk about Candido a little bit, the late, great Chris Candido.
Yeah!
If Chris was alive today, he would be booking something, Asia Day producing. He might even still be wrestling. He was so great. His only problem was in the 90s, he was too short, too small.
That was my problem. But no, I mean, Chris was so good. You'd have to try really hard to have a bad match with Chris. And he was actually my first match in ECW in Waltham, Massachusetts. But, Waltham represents, yeah, there you go. No, but, so there were so many great moments, and it's hard to pick one, but everyone wants to rave about me and Rob's pay-per-view matches, but one of my favorite matches with Rob was at the ECW Arena. And we did a gimmick where I was jumped before the show, so he was wrestling Lance or Justin, I can't remember who, maybe it was Lance. And then, of course, there were run-ins, and I came in and helped with my ribs taped up and whatever. And as I'm leaving, Rob grabbed the mic and challenged me. He said, "These people paid to see me kick some ass, and I haven't kicked enough ass." So I went in the ring and started getting my ass kicked again. So the whole first part of that match was RVD. He was so over, you know. And then we did a impromptu spot with a table where it looked like an accident. We didn't do any rearranging the furniture or anything, and they were walking me back. I pushed everyone off, and I came back and finished the match. Well, when I came back, the tide turned. After that, it was Jerry, Jerry. And just the way we had everyone going home with these false finishes after one of them, and they're blowing the roof out the place, and we're laying within earshot of each other, and Rob goes, "Awesome," and I go, "We got him." And that was my favorite match with Rob, just because of the way that we had the fans that night. They were just blowing the roof off the place. And it's those nights when, and a lot of it's hard to come by now. It's when all the pieces of the puzzle fall into place and it's just perfect. And that's the drug you chase when you've got them blowing the roof off the place. And it's one of those nights you can't get to sleep till 5:30 in the morning and you're so jazzed. That's the drug of the business. And so that was, because of that night, the way the fans were, that was one of my favorite matches in ECW.
Yeah,
Jerry! How was you guys doing first lady of wrestling?
Probably any time I had to roll around with Kimono Wanalea. She was so little and she was so beautiful. She was so cute, and we would just roll around a cat fight. That was probably my favorite time in ECW. It was so easy.
My favorite ECW moment. So there was a time when Brian Pillman, late great Brian Pillman, kind of, long story short, organized a bidding war between WWF and WCW by acting like he was crazy. And people didn't know for sure if he was off his rocker or not. And he was able to procure a release from WCW. Bischoff gave him a release due to the fact that he was crazy. And he came to ECW for a short period of time. You remember this. You were there when I was there. I never knew Brian. Only met him in ECW once. But he liked me because I came from Calgary, from Stampede Wrestling, from the Dungeon. And he comes backstage. He had just caned Sandman, and he came backstage, and he's freaking out. Call 911! No, he didn't. Sandman came to a guy in the ring, maybe JT Smith or something. Pillman's freaking out. Call 911! He's wearing a pair of jeans with a rope as a belt. And he's running around with a... Call 911! We gotta get this guy to a hospital! He's acting crazy. No one knows what to do. He's running around. People are parting the Red Sea as he comes. He looks over at me and he winks just for 1 second, and then he goes back to being crazy. That was the first moment in my early years where I was like, he's working everybody. Everybody in the locker room, he's working Paulie, although Paulie probably, he's working Vince, he's working Bischoff, he's working everybody. He's a f***ing genius. I'm getting useless. I will never forget that quick wink. And it was a second where I was like, was that real? Oh, it was real. Because I was a Calgary kid. God bless Brian Pillman, man.
I guess it would have to be the night Bob and I got together. And there's a lot behind that, because before we got together, we were beating the hell out of each other, like you said before. I mean, killing each other every night just to try to get over with the ECW fans. And it was hard. And, you know, so that night leading up to that, I had a match with the Sandman. But before that, I was having matches, but again, it didn't click in my head how to really get over. It was that night we got together, when I had that match with the Sandman, everything started rising from there. And we tore the house down with that match, and next thing you know, Bubba runs out, everybody thinks he's going to hit me with the chair, and he whacks the Sandman. And that was also the night we almost killed poor Spike Dudley, hitting him with a greedy for the first time. It was great. And then I think, you know, other matches was with the Gangsters, New Jack and Osaka, Ron versus Jack. So, you know, a lot of people know that New Jack and I talked about each other badly on the internet a lot of times. But what you don't understand is that we all made up. And I remember one of the last things I had said to New Jack when I saw him at an independent show was, take care of yourself, I love you. Yeah. And that's something that I always say with. Because everybody, you know, he went, New Jack had a thing for going public and saying whatever he wanted to say to whomever he wanted to say it to. And regardless to what we went through or how many times we said what we said to each other, the last thing we said to each other was, we love each other.
My answer is the same as D-Von. The very first night we got together, the first 3D, and because we were not supposed to work. We were not supposed to make it. Nobody had plans for me and Devon. Nobody. Not one promote, not even Paul. But this was just based on a suggestion. Nobody had plans for us. And on my WWE ring, the inscription says, our way. Because that's how we did it. We did it our way. But the most special thing about the ECW arena and ECW, and I'm not blowing smoke up your asses because I don't do that. You are the most important part of ECW. And I will say this in a sense, AEW's fan base. I always compare the AEW fan base to the ECW fan base. They are passionate, they are behind their favorite wrestling company, and they will go to great lengths to defend it and support it no matter what is going on. We made a ton of mistakes. We all made a ton of mistakes in ECW. There's lots of mistakes, you know, in AEW too, but the fan base always stood behind, and that's what makes it so special. But,
like you were saying, 1 minute, and I've heard it happen many times in my matches, they'll be chanting, you fucked up. While 30 seconds later, they're chanting, this is awesome. They were there just to have a party, you know, they were to have a great time.
What's great, if you go to an indie show and somebody does something crazy, you get a chant of ECW. And you're like, yeah, a chant of ECW. Means well, something.
It does mean something to this day, and thank you guys for being here, and what a fucking amazing time.
One last time, as loud as you can. One, two, three.